Blog Talk Radio.
How you doing? It's 8 o'clock on Sunday night, which means it's the latest episode of Graphic Policy Radio with Where Comic Books and the Multiverses Meet. I'm one of your hosts, Brett Shanker. Joining me in a little bit will be Alana, who's going to be calling in as she's making her way back home. She's currently on the road. Up this week, we've got two good topics, both the DC New, the latest releases from DC Comics, and a depiction of women in comic books. So joining me now is Alana. Alana, are you there?
I'm sorry?
You're there. How you doing?
Can you hear me?
Yep. Can you hear me?
Yes.
All right. Great. Cool. So you're on the road, right?
Yeah, I just came through the Baltimore Harbor Tunnel, so hopefully from here on out I shouldn't have any reception problems.
All right. So, yeah, if you drop out, no big deal. I'll figure out how to wing it. Up this week we pretty much got two topics. The latest releases from DC Comics, just general new releases if we want to go over, and women, and I'm going to kind of expand it and say minorities in comics, because there's actually a lot that's coming up when it comes on that topic. So
definitely.
I guess up first, let's talk new releases. And I'm just going to kind of do what we did last time and go down the new releases from DC. Up first alphabetically is Batman and Robin. Did you get a chance to read it?
I just finished it. I downloaded it from the iPod app and read it right now on my phone. So it was good. I don't love it, but it was good. I like that the comic is focusing on the father and son relationship between Batman and Damian. I think that's interesting and a sort of subject matter you don't see much in comics elsewhere. I want to punch Damian through the head, but that's the point, you know.
You're supposed to.
Yeah, exactly. How is he so disturbed? My God. but I think it sets up an interesting dynamic between the characters, and I like the idea of Batman finding different ways to mark his family tragedy now. What did you think?
I thought it was good. Damian was kind of a little shit like he's supposed to be. I like the fact that he's really, really disturbing. And he's not so cookie cutter like Robin. It's interesting where Batman is the sunnier of the two characters when it's usually Robin that's supposed to brighten up his day.
And that's true. And, you know, people were saying that a lot back when Dick Grayson was Batman working with Damian, and that made sense. But now it's kind of scary that even the actual Batman, Bruce Wayne, is not as dark as Damian, his son.
So here's my issue with it. So we've got the DC revamp, and I guess Justice League is supposed to be him younger. How old is he that in, like, there's what's supposed to be 5 years difference between Justice League and the modern day, like, Batman and Robin? How old is he supposed to be, and when did he have Damian?
Well, it's possible that while Batman was doing his traveling the world, learning martial arts, that's when Talia al Ghul got up with him and got pregnant, even though that's before he was Batman, officially. So it could work on that level, but I also really don't care.
I guess that's the important thing, is if you don't care, that's like a good sign that the writing's solid and the book's pretty decent.
I'm bad with timelines anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Comics aren't about the timelines.
No.
Up next would be Batwoman.
Oh, Batwoman. I mean, okay, this is the most beautiful comic art, like, ever, practically. I mean, he's amazing, phenomenal, gorgeous, I can't even express my enthusiasm enough of how lovely the artwork is. The story is not as good without Rucka, I hate to say it, but it's still a fantastic comic. And people should all buy it right away. And maybe, the longer they've worked on the writing, the better the writing will be. And the writing is not bad, don't get me wrong. It's just that Rucka was truly outstanding.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the art alone is worth the book. The story, it wasn't as good as Rucka. And my issue is it played off a little bit too much in Batwoman Elegy, in that if you hadn't read it, you're probably not going to fully follow everything. And to me, the DC revamp is supposed to be more of like a fresh start, let's get going, and it didn't play too much into it.
That's true, although if you think about the fact that, you know, we even had, Rachel Maddow writing the intro to the Batwoman paperback. I mean, maybe that book has penetrated mass market in a different way through all the critical acclaim it got. If that was an issue in throughout all the books, I would be concerned, Brett, but I'm okay with it having... That, you know, that's such a new comic book to start with. I think it's okay for that book to assume that you've been following this story to a certain extent. It doesn't have decades long of backstory and confusion to it. So.
Right. I mean, it basically has the one trade and that's it. The good is that it does, at least it does feel like the next volume of that series. As opposed to like, you know, there's good and bad in that. It's maybe not as open for new readers as it could have been, but at the same time, it doesn't completely throw away what came before and does feel like a somewhat natural progression from it.
And people are going to pick up the book for one of two reasons. Either they're attracted to the concept of Batwoman existing, or they're like, oh, this is the most gorgeous art ever. They're going to pick it up for one of those two reasons. So
yes.
I think that's who the draw.
So up next is, let me get back to my listing of everything about Deathstroke. I don't know if you read that one.
I did. I have enjoyed Deathstroke a great deal in various comics. I don't know if he's ever had his own series. I thought the art was ugly. I say that a lot. And I thought the story wasn't particularly interesting or creative, and I couldn't follow it until I looked at it, went through it again. I think Deathstroke might have been an opportunity for them to really set up a story that could appeal to non-superhero comics readers, then they didn't really take advantage of that too much. I did like the twist at the end, but I'm not going to pick it up again.
See, I actually liked this one. Yeah, I kind of liked it. I think it started off with like a very much of an A-Team feel, where they had this crazy mission they had to go on. The him with the sword constantly kind of threw me off, but like...
He always has one. That's like, you know...
Yeah, but this was a big
sword. He's like a non-funny Deadpool.
Yes. Yeah, and that's what I think he's kind of supposed to be in a way. But, like, they needed something to kind of bring back him being a badass. And I think the ending of this definitely had it, where I started off reading it, and I'm just like, oh, they're going to give him a team, and he's going to have sidekicks, and this is going to suck. And then the ending basically just took care of all of that. So I got to give him props for that. It's enough to keep me around for at least a couple more issues. But, I mean, this is them trying to set up their Wolverine Deadpool-type character. I mean, it's very blatant.
Yeah. It's a smart place to be, although I really do think they could have strayed. I think when you said A-Team, I've never liked that show, but many people do, and I do think that could have been a good approach for the book. So.
Yeah, like, I love the A-Team, so, I mean, that's... Or the TV series, the movie was utter dog shit, but it has potential, I think. But I can tell it's one that's going to not be for everybody. It's really, I think, going to come off as like a He-Man throwback to the 90s testosterone-filled comic.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
One that I know where we disagree on is Demon Knights.
Yes. Oh, Demon Knights was the most fun comic that I've read in the new revamped DC universe. It was more fun than I had reading anything else. I've been a fan of Etrigan since the second I saw an image of him, but I'm not the kind of person who picks up every single comic that has a character they like in it. I'm very much oriented towards the way, like, the writer who's doing the book. And I love the idea of this book and it being set in the Middle Ages. I think cast put together so far, especially if this is in fact Grant Morrison's version of Shining Knight, according to Seven Soldiers of Victory, I think the team is going to be very fun. The bits of humor in the book worked for me. I thought they were quite funny, very creative. Love Vandal Savage and how he was handled. I just enjoyed the book. I thought it was funny and charming and creative and interesting, and I'm really looking forward to the next. So tell me why you're wrong.
So there are things I liked. So what I liked about it was it did pull in like Vandal Savage, which I thought was entertaining. I guess it was Xanadu that's with him. Etrigan.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so like
yes,
that, those three kept me really entertained. As a whole, though, I felt like I was reading a really kind of bad D&D campaign.
What?
I mean, that was just kind of my, like, I'm not a big fantasy person to begin with, so I come from...
You're not a fan of what? I'm sorry, of what?
Of just fantasy in general.
Oh.
Which doesn't help.
I'm not a huge fantasy reader myself, but I mean, what about it made you think it seemed like a bad D&D campaign? Like, it wasn't like people were standing there doing turn-based interactions and, like, rolling for plus 15. What about it? Was it just the setting?
Yeah, I think it was the setting. It was them winding up at a bar. You had these bad guys kind of doing, like, what is your destiny and are you following the right path? I mean, there was...
Those are classic tropes. Of course, I just said I'm not really reading much fantasy, but I will say, I did just recently finally get around to reading The Mists of Avalon about 20 years later than I should have. And I do really like how those stories set up the Arthurian cycle as being a story that repeats itself endlessly. And I love how Madame Xanadu reacts to that and breaks through it. And it gave us a good sort of feeling for the setting. I got no Chris. I mean, the art's good, but not great. But, like, that's about the only negative thing I can say about it. I don't think it was corny at all. And I even though it plays with some consistent themes, I thought it did it artfully and in a way that made you identify with the story. So,
I mean, maybe it's just I've seen those themes a lot. Like, to me, there wasn't enough that, like, really blew me away as being really fresh. And I think the thing that really kind of jarred me, and not really jarred me, but made me cock my head, was, like, Etrigan speaks in almost this riddle way. Like,
oh yeah,
and
no,
that's totally gone.
Well, I was about to say, like, actually, no. My one complaint was he didn't speak in rhyme. He didn't speak in verse of any kind. That drove me a little bit crazy. I could understand them not trying to handle every single thing he says in that way, but they should at least have him speaking in that way in certain moments and at certain points in the story. I was very surprised to have him not speak that way, and also that the invocation has been changed. No more gone. Form of man, arise, the demon Etrigan. They had a different version of the incantation.
Yeah, which was funny was because going into the story, I was expecting not to like it because of that. Like, just his dialogue in books, I don't know why, it just irritates me, and probably is because I hate Shakespeare and that sort of reading anyway.
Yeah,
I don't... Now it's all coming together.
So wrong. So I guess it sort of splits this way. If you are okay with fantasy, and certainly if you love fantasy, and if you're comfortable with sort of, I guess, early English modes of speech and people with swords and humor and awesome characters, then I think it's a good book for you.
All right, we'll leave it on that.
And female cast.
Yeah.
In a decent sized female cast.
Did you read Frankenstein?
I tried. I actually purchased it and I've read it and I feel that I tried so hard. I'm not sure what I read. There are some individual science fiction ideas in the book that I think were really creative, like the micro city. That's interesting. But
yeah,
that book was really hard to penetrate and confusing, and I don't know. It kind of lost me.
Yeah, I kind of liked the series when it was called Hellboy. And
oh my god, that's
Michael
so
Dulles
funny. Frank said the same thing. I probably Frank is my boyfriend and he gives him the copy. He's like, what is this, like Hellboy, but different? Yeah, yeah. Hellboy is easier to read.
It's easier to read. Right. It's a lot funnier. It's a lot more entertaining. It's a lot more pulpish and entertaining. It was like there was so much that was good and then just so much that was bad. But like to me, the art, like if people came to me and said, should I read this? I would say, no, go pick up Hellboy.
Right. No, I agree. I do feel like it asks some interesting and worthwhile science fiction questions, but it just wasn't a fun read.
Yeah. Yes. Green Lantern, did you read that?
No, never do. How was that?
I liked it. So they've kind of flipped stuff up. Hal Jordan's out as Green Lantern. Sinestro is back in.
He's the Green Lantern of our sector?
So that's the question. Is I don't think he follows our sector. I think he's another sector. So exactly what he is covering is a little unclear.
Does it occur to the Guardians that you shouldn't give power rings to people whose name is Sinestro?
But here's the thing is they don't actually choose who the rings go to. The rings choose themselves.
Oh.
So they are now kind of caught in this quandary of the rings chose him. What the hell do you do?
That's an interesting setup.
And the other is if their job is to protect the universe, Sinestro does that. He just does it with a dictatorial sense. He's really good at protecting his home planet. He just kind of enslaves it at the same time.
That's interesting.
And the other is it throws back Hal Jordan's been stripped of the ring, so now he's kind of back to his normal life. And he's been off, like, how many years saving the universe? So now he has to deal with the fact that he's got no money, he doesn't have a car, he's getting evicted because he can't pay his bills.
Wow.
So there's a lot I liked. Like, it was that thing like, okay, this is a fresh start, this is really interesting. What do we got going here? And then the other part is Sinestro doesn't really want the ring. He kind of liked having his own core and doing his own thing.
So he had his own group prior to becoming, like, he had the Sinestro core prior to becoming the Green Lantern? So, like,
yeah. Well, I mean, he went from Green Lantern, fell, got pissed off, got a yellow ring, started his own core, and now he's got the green ring back.
Who's the book by?
Geoff Johns.
Oh, okay. Right, of course.
Who's been writing Green Lantern for God knows how long at this point. It's probably been,
yeah.
I think it was 60-something pages was the last. So, I mean, we're probably talking 5-6 years.
Yeah.
There's enough here that I really like and that it's fresh and new. Who knows where it's going to go? I mean, just the fact that I like the idea of having a superhero stripped of his power and then coming back and being like, wow, my life's shit because I've been off being a superhero and wasn't paying attention to my life is great. Like, there's a scene where he goes out with Carol Ferris, who he's always had this love affair with, and he's like, I will need to ask you something. And she thinks he's going to pop the question. He's like, can you co-sign a loan for a car with me?
That's interesting. I think that's a very modern, interesting, relevant take on the story. I'll pick it up if it's not still sold out in my local comic book store.
It's worth checking out. Like, the next couple issues, I could see it going off the rails pretty easily, but at least the first issue was good, was really good, I think. And the last probably year of Green Lantern was kind of going on fumes. It wasn't as good as some of his previous work. So it's really kind of invigorated it a bit. I'm going to guess you haven't read it, but Grifter?
No, I would have picked it up had it was sold out in my store. I know the character a little bit from reading Wildstorm stuff, but I've never been a real close adherent to him. What did you think?
I hated it. It, to me, kind of seemed like it was supposed to be Sawyer from Lost, but with guns, but even then it didn't pick up that much. Like, the Grifter that I liked, and I highly recommend these two trades that came out. It's Wildcats 3.0, Volume 1 and Volume 2, which was an amazing take on superheroes. Basically, what was Wildcats said, forget this. We're not doing the superhero thing anymore. We're going to start a corporation and change the world through our powers running a corporation.
That's creative.
Yeah, and that Grifter was awesome because he basically wound up being the corporate muscle and did a thing where he was screwing around and, you know, if someone had to get killed, he went to go kill him and they broke his legs at one point, so he's in a wheelchair for a while. Like, really, really awesome take on the character, and just as a whole, a fantastic story. But this one, I kind of read it and I finished it and I was just like, what the hell did I just read?
No, I gotta say, overall, I think that it's gonna be a bitch for them to integrate the Wildstorm universe into the DC universe, because
yes.
So much of what Wildstorm did was commentary off of what was going on in the other two big companies, and I don't think that, like, kind of falling back on what we talked about last week, you can't, Superman and Batman, I mean, you have, you know, when you have Apollo and the Man, I know they're a riff off of those themes, and you can't have them existing in the same world.
Yes, exactly. So the other issue I had was, like, I read Deathstroke and Grifter, and both came out the same week, and they're very similar characters in a way. And I just think Deathstroke was so much better than Grifter. I'm like, I'm going to stick around for at least a couple issues, and hopefully it picks up. But, like, I read the first one, I'm just like, seriously, Wildcats was so, especially the last volume of it, was so amazing. Because so let me set up this volume and I see if you get interested in it. Is Spartan, who is basically an android from a different world, creates a battery that never runs out, and he uses that as his product in this corporation. So it's not just this battery that they're doing, but then they're also throwing it in cars. And he has to get a really good image. So let's go buy a media company. And who's that piss off? That pisses off the oil industry, who then goes to the government, who then wants to investigate it all. Like, that was Wildcats 3.0. And
Oh, wow. I'm going to buy that. That sounds fantastic.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my God, was it good. But this, like, it just kind of forgets all that. And it just, again, reminds me of how good and overlooked that series was.
Yeah, I think that it's a shame that Wildstorm is getting folded. I think it's really a shame that Wildstorm is being folded into the DC Universe, because it, as its own thing, it was really good, and it doesn't. I don't think it works well when it's integrated with what's going on over there.
Yeah, it's just the
it's a loss.
The styles are don't mash up very well.
Right.
So, Legion Lost?
Didn't.
I
would.
I was not a fan. I thought the story was choppy. I don't really know Legion all that well. I think there was just too much going on, and I don't plan on getting the second issue. But yeah.
Oh well.
Yeah. Then we've got.
Oh
next
yeah,
week.
We can't buy everything.
Yeah, I mean, Legion of Superheroes, I think, is out next week, so who knows? Maybe that's better. But this one didn't wow me. Mr. Terrific.
I didn't pick it up, and I meant to. I mean, I like the concept of it being Tony Stark. How was the book?
It kind of reminded me of being African-American Tony Stark, but kept on bringing up the fact that he was the African-American Tony Stark, and that I didn't like about it. He's got the white girlfriend that the other African-American staffer doesn't like because she's white. And he's interested in her, and it was just like, seriously? I don't know. It's one, I probably not picking up the second issue, but.
Is any of the staff working on an African-American?
I have no idea. I don't know. It's an interesting one to look at, is to see who's handling minority characters, but. I don't know. I mean, just the fact it was like, oh, he's got a white girlfriend, and we're going to bring that up and make it very obvious. And he even makes a comment where they were just like, you know, who are you or what'd you do? And he's just like, well, you could have said, you know, thank you, Mr. Black Superhero. And it's just like, why do you have to say that? Why isn't just thank you, Mr. Superhero? It was almost kind of like pushing it in your face of, hey, he's a minority character. Look here. But, yeah.
Right, there are other ways of handling the racial questions, you know, and that seem more relevant and important than just being like, we're going to say the word black a lot, hey.
Yeah, and that's what it kind of, to me, it came off like. Something just didn't rub me the right way, but I have a feeling it's going to take a couple issues for it to, like, really find its pacing and its feet and get there, but I don't think I'm sticking around. There's way too much crap coming out.
What a shame. And, of course, you know, DC is going to say, oh, I guess people don't want to read about black characters then. Cancel all those books.
Yeah.
Just,
well,
no, it's just that one didn't work. Maybe it's a different writer, you know?
Exactly. I was like, the concept's good, and there was a lot I liked to it. There was just something, like, it was almost too political in your face where it just didn't do it right. Like,
that doesn't even seem like politics to me, though. That seems like instant level of analysis.
Well, so part of the story is he winds up throwing a fundraiser for a Republican presidential candidate. And the Republican, the candidate, makes some comment. It was like, I didn't think a liberal pinko leftist like you would support me. And his comment is something like, oh, we both believe in pushing for sciences, and you've spoke out about your against your party for that. It's just like, no, this isn't realistic and doesn't fit very well.
Because none of the Republicans would actually speak out in defense of science these days.
Well, one, there's that. But two, just like, you know, I don't see a politician going to a supporter who's throwing them a very big fundraiser in front of everyone and being like, I didn't think a pinko leftist like you would support me. And it's just like,
right. No, instead he would say, I think it's great that even the Democrats are realizing that I'm a fantastic leader. Like, that's what they would actually say.
Exactly.
You know,
so,
and that's, yeah. They wouldn't insult the person who's giving them money.
Yeah.
That's unrealistic.
So, yeah.
Well, you know what? If they need a political consultant, they could talk to us as people who've actually worked on campaigns before.
Yeah,
give us a call.
Realism is maybe that would have happened in the back room as they were drinking brandy as they snuck away from the fundraiser, but out in the open in front of everyone, hell no.
Yeah, yeah.
Red Lanterns, I'm guessing you didn't read it since
nope.
You got Green Lantern.
I saw the little preview of it. I'm glad to see that it has a cat in it. That's
I
important.
Love the cat. I love the cat. It just seems like DC's version of Ghost Rider.
Huh.
And
Ghost Rider was a hero. I mean,
yeah. Well, that's the thing, is this guy is like fueled by rage, so he's gonna go take on people who have done bad things and let the rage come out. So it seems almost like a cross between the Hulk and Ghost Rider and his motivation. And then there's a nice twist in that the rest of his core is just fueled by rage for rage's sake and doesn't see the good out of it that can come from it. So it's got a lot of potential. But we'll see. I think the problem is that it was a one-note gimmick, and being able to flip that and make it into an in-depth character with a lot more motivation is going to be actually somewhat difficult. But who knows? I mean, it'll be interesting. Resurrection Man?
I don't understand. I didn't pick it up. I don't really understand it. Apparently it's a book with a lot of history to it. What do you know about that?
I know nothing. I was going to actually ask you the same question.
Oh, sorry. New idea. But I believe that the guy who's writing it right now is the guy who invented the character back in the day.
It's interesting. It was kind of like Animal Man, where it really stood out because it was so different than everything else. My only issue is it's clear that there's like a heaven and hell that's fighting over this guy, which we've seen a million times before.
Preacher.
Yes,
a million times before.
Preacher would be one. It also kind of had like a feel of like Highway to Heaven for it. Like the old Michael Landon show.
Oh, I don't even know about that.
Yeah, I just remember some episodes here and there. It was interesting. Definitely enough for me to come back for a second issue. But then again, like, I can see it getting axed relatively quickly. Like, it's just, it was very jumbly. It's interesting. It reminds me more of like old school 80s DC horror that might have been written by like Gaiman or more or something like that.
I do think the character's from the 80s, actually.
Yeah, I mean, it has that feel to it. Like, it's interesting. It's definitely one that I'm going to let go a couple issues and see where it goes from there. So I'm going to skip Suicide Squad, because that's going to leave us into our second topic. But did you read Superboy?
No, I did not.
It's another. It's enough that it stands out from Superman. It's very interesting. The one thing that I have to say is that the new DC comics all seem to have an interesting thing going on, where they all have like a mystery set up, where they're not going to give you all the information, and you kind of have to break through a little bit. And it's not just a simple, here's the character, here's a bad guy plotting, the character eventually is going to meet up with the bad guy and has to stop them. They're much more like, I'd say, television mystery based, similar to Lost, where you're going to have to kind of figure out all the puzzles. Like, there was something to that.
That's smart. It's a smart way to do it since television seems to be successful.
Yeah, but I kind of noticed that it was very heavily through a lot of the series is all that, where there's, we're going to give you the basics, we're going to leave out some key facts here and there and let the story unfold much more serialized television than anything else. But, I mean, it was okay. I liked it better than Action Comics, which says something.
Hmm.
And I generally hate Superman, so for me to say I like this means it's got to be fairly decent.
Yeah, yeah. I forget, did you like Action Comics or not?
No, I hated it.
Yeah, no, I didn't like it either. I thought it was really disappointing.
Yeah, I mean, as a whole, I think Grant Morrison's pretty overrated. I'm getting a lot of shit for it, but Morrison to
I feel like he's got his hands on a lot of things right now, and ever since he's had his hands on a lot of things, his stuff hasn't been quite as good.
Yeah, like his run on Batman, I thought at times was incomprehensible. Final Crisis, you couldn't read without a freaking decoder ring and decipher to figure out what was going on in his head.
I'm a big fan of the New Gods, and I still had a hard time with some of Final Crisis.
Yeah, it's...
But I love 52 and the stuff that he did in 52.
See, I didn't read 52.
What? Yeah. Wonderful. Do it.
All
wonderful
right.
Books.
I'll check it out. So the final DC comic is up is Suicide Squad.
Whew.
Yeah.
Suicide Squad. That should have been the heir to Secret Six, basically.
Yes.
I mean, in every way. It's not. There were some good things in it, mostly involving King Shark and him screaming meat. Fantastic characterization as King Shark. Loved it. And I have to agree with Chris Sims. Where the heck is Deadshot's mustache?
Where's his mustache?
It's just a Deadshot without it.
But also, what's up with the mask, the Man in the Iron Mask helmet that he has?
In some ways, it makes more sense for him to have more of a helmet than a sock over his face. I can live with that. But I miss the sleazy mustache. It was such a unique trademark, and he had such a good look. It was so Deadshot.
And he also has the soul patch.
I'm sorry?
He also has the soul patch. It's not just the mustache.
Yeah.
Like the handlebar mustache,
yeah.
Have a soul
he
patch.
He needs dubious facial hair. That's part of his character.
Yes.
And I hope they didn't actually kill off, I shouldn't say, the person who they sort of killed off, because that was such an interesting and unique character, and it would be such a loss to have whoever that is. And maybe that person actually isn't even. It leaves it ambiguous. But, of course, the other really big change in the book that I think we're all very concerned about is what the hell did they do with Amanda Waller?
So, here's my thing on that. I will go and agree with everyone. There's a good chance they skinnied her up. But you don't really see a whole lot of her in the book. So there is a slight possibility. It's probably not high, but there is a slim possibility that they haven't drastically put her on Jenny Craig or Slim Fast.
But no, because I'll tell you what, to me it isn't just that Amanda Waller is suddenly a skinny, skinny lady. It's her button, her blouse is unbuttoned halfway down her chest.
Yeah.
And Amanda Waller as a character is not a woman who defines herself by sexing it up. She's
correct.
One of the few characters in comics who isn't a sex pot, which is kind of realistic in the sense that not everybody runs around with their shirts unbuttoned to their waist. And I will tell you, women who work for the federal government especially do not run around with their shirts unbuttoned down to their waist and their bras hanging out. You don't do that in the professional environment.
Well, unless you're interns.
Yeah. But especially, you know, and so that's just a betrayal of the character and of her own personal strength. And it makes her look, I know that most new readers don't know who the heck she is, but I do think that new readers would be happy to see a middle-aged, strong woman character who isn't defined by trying to be sexy, who's just terrifyingly badass. And everyone has to respect her because she's so freaking intimidating as an individual, you know. And I think that people would want to see someone like that in the comics. And certainly any of us who have read her miss her.
So, yeah. So when it comes to the badassness, I don't think that's changed as much because she clearly was part of – it's kind of hard to describe it without giving away the –
No, right. She was part of the thing that happened, but her the way she held herself and her head and the art in that last, and the, you know, it's like I don't think it felt like the same. You know, I'm pretending she had the same weight and the same clothing she used to wear. I still don't feel that quite the way she handled herself had the same gravitas that we know as Amanda Waller.
No, it's much more Abu Ghraib than anything else.
Yeah.
Like she would have done really well in certain administrations.
She's totally like Dick Cheney style person.
Which kind of makes her badass in a really twisted sort of way. Like it at least still holds that, but at the same time, like it's one where you don't get a good shot of what her body is like. So I think, yeah, everyone's going to be right that they probably skinnied her up and turned her into a sex bot. But at the same time, like until I see a full shot, I'm not going to completely call for people's
heads. And you know, here's the thing. I would love to have DC have a large female character who is like super sexed up and who does dress, you know, because there's lots of, you know, beautiful large women who will dress that way. But that's not Amanda Waller. I'd love to see one of them take one of the other characters like that. You know, here's the thing. Maybe through the public protest that we've put together, an Actually petition that you can find through Twitter. If you go to Graphic Policy and look for the blog post about Amanda Waller, you'll see the link to it, telling DC, Waller, not smaller. Fans of fictionals come in all shapes and sizes. And there are no middle-aged or older ladies in the DCU right now that we've none. Certainly not in any position of power the way Amanda Waller is. And there's no heavy people. Especially not women.
Yes.
And there's no women who don't have their boobs hanging out everywhere.
Well, that was the thing. It's funny is the first time I kind of looked at the graphic was screenshots online. And like I looked really, really close and I was just like, okay, I can't quite tell if it's really her bra that's showing. And it kind of looks like there's a nipple in there a little bit, but I'm not quite sure because that could have been shadows.
You're just seeing things. But the bra is there.
So that was one where I was like, I'm not quite sure because it's weird. I'll circle it for you and send you the screenshot at some point, but you'll see the point where I'm just like, okay, something might be up there. So that the nipple I don't think was there, but the bra definitely was. It's really, really subtle, which makes it even less of a reason for it to be there. It just doesn't add anything. It's to me would be one thing to change a character if they added anything. But this doesn't add anything. It actually takes away from her in so many ways.
Yeah, so DC's gone to representing fewer different kinds of people in the new DCU at its current rate.
Yes, exactly. And for those who want to sign the Twitter petition, if you go to act.ly/48x, you'll get to it, and I believe we just tweeted it up. So if you go to Graphic Policy on Twitter, you should be able to find it there as well. But this goes on to a bigger question of some of the changes. It wasn't just Amanda Waller they changed, but it was also Harley Quinn.
Yeah, Harley Quinn. I mean, Harley Quinn, you know, wears her little leggings and stuff, but she's never been running around in a corset with her chest hanging out before.
No.
I mean, it's less of an extreme difference in this case because, it wasn't like Harley Quinn was going around in sensible suits. But even so, they definitely tarted her up into sort of fetishy gear. As far as I'm concerned, there are very few superhero characters or supervillains who should be wearing actual corsets in these days. There's some for whom it's in character, but for most of them, no. It's just pandering to do it.
Well, I think my favorite was, I don't remember what site said it, was just like there's a scene of them walking through the snow, and she's got snow boots on, a corset, and then a, like, bomber jacket. And even the bomber jacket is short. And it's just like, no, that's just absolutely not in any way, just reasonable to be wearing for anything. It makes no sense.
Yeah, and then they have a jacket on the guy who's literally on fire. I think that was Comics Alliance who wrote that.
Yeah, a few of them probably pointed out. I could tell what they did is they seem to have tried to change the character to be more like Arkham City and Arkham Asylum, which is okay, but even that character wasn't quite as skimpy as far as clothes.
And you know, And you know what else? I mean, I think that the folks at DC Women Kicking Ass wrote this. Harley Quinn as a character is incredibly popular, and not just from the recent video games, but since the TV show.
Yep.
So her character as it existed was doing very well on its own. They had no reason to try to revamp her. I think that fewer women will like her now than women who did before.
Yeah, I mean, I would go with one thing is that the old outfit could have maybe used something to update it a bit, but even then, like, I don't know how you would. It is a fairly iconic outfit. I mean, she was big in Batman Animated Series. Like, she was awesome in that. When I hear Harley Quinn in comic books, when I'm reading it, I'm hearing that really high-pitched, irritating voice from Batman Animated that I loved.
Which is where she came from. I mean, she weaseled her way into the print books based on that character as she existed then.
But it was interesting is that you had – so another comic came out this week. It was Ultimate Comics Spider-Man. And there you went from Peter Parker to Miles Morales. So you went from a white, fairly bland kid to a
– He's not bland.
So,
no.
I mean, he's kind of – kind of a dorky.
He was not bland. I mean, he was dorky. Dorky is not bland. Dorky is certainly a personality itself.
I thought he was kind of bland. I mean, it's just...
Okay.
He never kind of really... I've never been a big Spider-Man fan, and I don't know. Part of it was just... I didn't think he had great personality probably in the runs I've read, and I couldn't tell you what runs those were, but I don't know. For me, it was like he was just like the average character. And then you've the average white character, I guess you would say. But then you've got Miles Morales, who they've changed to half Hispanic, half black, from Queens. In a way, an improvement, I think, is that they've at least opened it up to a lot more and a bit more modernized. When then you've got DC, who's almost taking a step back with Waller and Harley Quinn.
And not having John Stewart as Green Lantern, and not having, at least I don't think, not having the new Blue Beetle and bringing it back to either be Ted Kord or non-existent, I don't recall. Yeah, no, I think Marvel's doing the right thing by bringing in Miles Morales. I mean, I'm defending Peter Parker to you, but I do think that Miles Morales is the smart thing for DC to be doing. It's about time they had some more iconic characters who are coming in from a more diverse background, just like fans are, and I think it's a wise choice. And DC is, you know, the thing is, like, when DC gets rid of the minority characters, it's because the fans who are pre-existing are complaining that they missed the old ones. It's not that the fans are saying they don't want brown characters, it's that they're saying, I miss the character I grew up with. But the problem is, if that's the way it's going to be, you're never going to get any racial progress in comics. And as many people have pointed out, to a whole generation of TV watchers, John Stewart is the Green Lantern. So...
Yes. Yeah, I mean, it's huge. It's interesting is that from the 2 weeks that I've seen for DC is there's so much they're doing right. And then there's also so much they're doing wrong at the same time. It's really hit or miss from what I can tell. And then you've got Marvel, who I think played it fairly smart this week. They built up the story about Miles Morales, and they hit it into the newspapers, and they wait a while, and it was the second week of DC where they released it. And there's, to me, it's just a kind of a stark contrast of that. Is one is, I think, changing things. One company's trying to change things to really kind of boost sales, and that's really it, and not really thinking about the bigger picture of how do comics reflect on the real world. And then you've got another company who, the Miles Morales is a thing to boost sales. Like, let's be honest, it's them. They needed to shake something up and do something different. But at the same time, in that discussion, they were like, you know what, let's go big or go home. Let's do something different and really shake up Spider-Man and what it means to be a hero and superheroes as a whole and do this whole new thing from a new perspective.
No, I agree. It was definitely smart. And look, I haven't mentioned or paid attention to anything that happened in the Ultimates comic line for years and years. So they're at least successfully getting me to talk and think about the Ultimates again.
Did you read The Ultimate Spider-Man or no?
No, I read like one issue of Ultimate Spider-Man that they gave away for free or something. I don't know. I never was into that book. I read the Ultimates. I loved the first two volumes of the Ultimates, and I read much of Ultimate X-Men, which I thought was good as well, and Ultimate Galactus was interesting. I never really got into the Ultimate Spider-Man book, though.
It was, to me, it was the Ultimate Spider-Man. There wasn't enough that really defined him and the regular Spider-Man. I mean, there was definite differences. But there's nothing that really got me to pause and say, you know what, I need to read this and keep up with this and check it out. But I read this first issue with Miles Morales, and I have to say, it's like, it was really good. It was interesting. I think the only issue I had with it is that, you know, thinking about Amazing Fantasy 15 and those early issues of Spider-Man, like when it came to origin issues, it was like, here's the one issue. Here's his origin. That's it. Let's get going with the story. Whereas this is clearly written for a trade. You know, it's one issue. You get part of the story. It's interesting. It has like a nice ending to it that kind of keeps you entertained. And, you know, if you're interested in that, in Miles Morales as a character, you're going to come back. But it's clearly spread out, whereas it used to be much more, storytelling as a whole in comic books was much more compact.
And I think that is definitely a pronounced difference, but I don't have a problem with that at all. I mean, the reason why Spider-Man and the other origin stories back in the 60s were done that way is because that's how comic consumers were. They were young kids, and you couldn't necessarily guarantee they were going to pick up the next book. And now the audience isn't as narrowly defined in that way. I think it's fine for them to drag it out and to think about doing it as a trade paperback. I don't have a problem with that at all.
Yeah, it was just interesting. I think that was my only thing, was that it was spread out. Like, it was still really good. The origin kind of, there was a lot that played to the origin of Peter Parker as Spider-Man, which was nice. The interesting one was the whole him and the charter school. What was released was that was all that was in the comic.
That's definitely my as we talked about. I mean, that's my concern with the book, is it is stuff straight out of Waiting for Superman, which is a documentary that has been completely disproven by outside journalism reporting to have been total pandering to the charter school movement, which is supported by corporations who want to take money out of the public school system and put it into private companies. So that's a problem.
Yeah, well, what was interesting, and hopefully it'll make you feel a little bit better, is that afterwards, when he gets selected, part of the thing is him making comment was like, you know, we're all happy, but at the same time, we don't know how we're going to pay for it. Which at least kind of brings up this thing of like, yeah, it's great, but, you know, really
we shouldn't have to pay for it. We're supposed to have a public education system that enables people to get a good education for free. Like, that's the point.
Yeah.
But if you're going to be spending all of this stuff, cutting the amount of money spent on education, putting it into, you know, like company-run schools, it's not going to work. Sorry, I'm just something that makes me very angry. But it is really heavy-handed, though, how you had, like, the lottery number being 42. Jackie Robinson's jersey is 42. I don't know.
Interesting. Also, hopefully it's not a spoiler, is the spider that gets out is number 42.
Oh, shit, that's right. Excuse me. Yes, that is also an interesting point.
So, I mean, yeah, I mean...
I don't think it's a 42 Douglas Adams thing. I think it's a 42 Jackie Robinson thing. That's what I think.
I wouldn't doubt that. But you might know, so one thing is, so charter schools, do the kids who get selected still have to pay for the school?
No, I mean, the point is that it's not supposed to be paid for, at least in New York. It's, you know, there's lots of supplies and things like that that you have to buy no matter what school you go to.
Right.
But the school is supposed to be free. Sometimes the expense can be like, it's the school is not near your house, so how do you get there?
Okay, so I will absolutely go back and reread this, because the panel I'm thinking of, at least a small scene, is there are some references that they're worried that they're not going to be able to pay for it, which I thought was kind of odd and didn't seem quite right. But I could be totally wrong.
Yeah. Well, I'd be happy to sit down with them and give them the Charter School 101, as with a lot of my teacher friends, so I know, to let them know how it really is. But yeah, it's not, you don't pay for them.
All right. The public, not
the students.
Well, I'm definitely, I'll snap a photo, and then we can do a nice post as whether or not this was realistic of what was said.
But, I'll get school teachers to comment.
Yeah, I mean, it would be interesting. I mean, it's not really touched upon. So at this point, I'm going to give I did hear Joe Quesada or Brian Michael Bendis speak in another radio broadcast about the issue, and he's just like, yeah, you know, we brought this up, and immediately everyone kind of jumped down our throats and said that we were anti-union.
That he saw that.
Yeah, no, it was absolutely fantastic that he saw that. And his whole thing was like, you know, please just let it play out, and if you got issues, you got issues, but, you know, it's an idea we want it. It's a real issue. We wanted to explore it. We have an opportunity to explore it. You know, just kind of bear with us. And it was like, one, great that he saw it. Yeah, it was great that he saw that and that he's aware of that. He actually made the point that he actually belongs to a union. I want to say he's a member of like the Writers Guild or something like that. I got to go find the radio broadcast and I'll send it to you. But he said that he was a union, a dues paying union member.
Chances are he's in the Writers Guild. He's probably written for television and was a member of the Writers Guild of America. Well, chances are, yeah.
Yeah, I'm almost positive he's written for television. I mean, he's probably would get it just off of Powers alone. He should be probably a member.
He's completely a member based on Powers. Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah, and I'm willing to let it play out. I was concerned about the fact that this is an issue that a lot of folks don't have a lot of information about and are just sort of going off this one propaganda documentary.
Yeah.
But I'm not suspicious of his intent, and I'm definitely willing to let the narrative play out. And I think the fact that he acknowledges that people were concerned about it being anti-union speaks to the fact that our current campaign, while they're not smaller, could certainly have an impact on what happens in the books themselves, because as we can see, creators are listening.
Yes, they absolutely are.
The folks should have signed that petition.
Yeah, I tweeted again, and for those who want to do it, it's ACT.ly/48X is the petition. It's a great petition. If you got a Twitter account, you can go there, you tweet to DC Comics, and it basically says, Waller got smaller, fans and fictionals are all shapes and sizes, and the link to the petition itself where it explains a little bit more about the issues. So far we've got a reach of just under 18,000 people that we've gone out to, but we need more tweets. The audience might have seen it, but people definitely need to tweet to get DC to see it. If people go there, it'd be much appreciated. That's the other is like a lot of sites jumped on the Amanda Waller thing to kind of go back to that. It's one like, the bra showing is really odd. I just don't quite get the point of it.
It's not enough that you've had so many characters in the comics, women, only women, wearing clothing to work that women don't wear to work. Like, you just can't do that. I don't know if they've ever met a woman who's had a day job or perhaps never actually, like, looked at what a woman wore when she left the house. Actually, the kinds of clothes they put women in truly show that they've never looked at what women wear when they leave the house. But it's mind-blowing. It's like, yeah, I teach at a public school, and I'm wearing a flutter top that's unbuttoned from the bottom up, shows my stomach. It's cute. Just do that to work, whatever. Women, like, wear that to their jobs all the time, especially grown-ass women. You know, like, oh, these are my huge, low-slung flares because it's 1993, and it's just so bizarre. I don't know. Like, do they not have women in their lives? It's a little bit disturbing.
Well, hanging out with them at New York Comic Con, it was mostly female editors that I was hanging out with. So they definitely work with women. So I don't know if they just aren't around them. Because, again, the artists, I know a lot of artists kind of work at home by themselves in a studio. So maybe they really aren't around women a whole lot.
But it's really strange. It's not like you can't put them in sexy and attractive clothing that they would actually maybe wear to work or wear around, but they don't put them in those. They put them in bizarre, unrealistic, laughable, and oftentimes making the characters look like they're 12 kinds of outfits. And
yeah.
I'm not going to be physically intimidated by a 12-year-old, let me tell you. I'm not particularly scared of them.
Well, you know what's interesting? Between Waller and Quinn, you had two female characters who basically had their boobs hanging out. And I'm just wondering maybe if that's just the style of the artist.
The boob hanging outing style of art. It's a new school of art coming out of the Northwest. Big cultural significance, exploring the round shapes of the bosom.
Well, as soon as I got
sure.
I can't think of who did the art for it. I'm going to have to go look, but I'm interested to see, going back to previous work, to see if that's just how he's drawn women in the past. And if that's, like, a common theme throughout his drawing. Because there are some people, like, Rob Liefeld has a certain style to his characters.
Yes, he does.
And he might...
Footless style.
Yeah, he's got more feet in the second issue of The Infinite number 2. He just goes on to a clenched teeth style instead in that one.
Yeah, that is part of the style. And then the eyes that are the size of a pinhole on opposite sides of their head.
Yes.
And the female physiology that actually makes their spines look broken. No, I mean, it's true. Different artists have different specific styles. I'm not sure quite how they think about the boob hanging out school of art.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's the one where it'd be interesting to go back to really see previous works and, like, if this is just how this particular artist has depicted them in the past.
Mm-hmm. Or if he has problems with mustaches consistently. That's another possibility. I do think he did a great job with King Shark. The writer, too. I mean, I like King Shark. I liked King Shark a lot. That was well done.
Was King Shark always a hammerhead?
No, he was not a hammerhead. But I don't mind them changing his species because whether or not he's just a killer, like a great white or a... Like, he wasn't a great white. What's the really big kind of shark that's not a great white?
Mako?
Right?
No.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know, whatever he was before, or a hammerhead, I don't think it really changes his character in any significant way, you know, as opposed to shrinking somebody's weight by 200 pounds.
I mean, that was one where I read it, I was just like, I don't remember him being a hammerhead, and then I kept on reading, I was like, oh, maybe he is, maybe I'm just totally was off on this, and didn't feel like...
No, he wasn't a hammerhead in any of the recent books, so I don't care, that's fine with me.
Oh, it was great, I just loved his whole, like... To me, that was, as far as the book, was one of the funniest moments where they're like, yeah, we don't remember how long he's been under the heat lamp. He might be dead.
Yeah. I mean, it's really great. The way they handled him definitely seemed to be coming from the Gail Simone School, which, of course, is a school I'm quite fond of.
Yes.
And I feel like, in that some ways, that character is a great opportunity to give you a sense of a non-human. I mean, I don't actually remember his origins, but... There's something about the way he thinks. Like, he's not a person, really. And that's interesting. There aren't a lot of characters that aren't people.
Like, yeah.
Superman is a freaking person, even, you know?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of... opportunity of just exploring what could be a difference. Like, a different perspective.
Different way of being entirely, yeah.
I mean, usually you get the underwater characters, they're humans, but they're, instead of, you know, they're Atlanteans instead of humans, but they're really still treated as humans. But there was one other, I don't know if you saw this, went around, about a Teen Titan, that they're going to have the gay Teen Titan. Brett Booth and Scott Lobdell is doing Teen Titans for DC, which is part of the relaunch. And it's not just they're going to have a gay character. They're going to have more of a, I don't know how to properly way to say it, I guess flamboyantly gay, more out and proud. I don't know.
Yeah, it's not that. Actually, here's the thing. As someone who has studied queer theory extensively in my undergraduate education, I mean, the way to talk about it is that he's more flamboyant and fey in his gender presentation.
Okay.
I think it's great. I think it's really sad that, although I understand why, that all of the LGBT characters in comics really are completely present their gender publicly in a way that's exactly in line with traditional heterosexual, like, presentation, gender presentations. And in reality, you know, there are heterosexual women who are very butch and gay women who are very butch. And there are subset heterosexual men who are very fey and homosexual men who are very fey. And there's a whole range of gender performance. And you don't see anything deviant in gender performance pretty much in comics. I love their idea of having sort of like a young twink, like, you know, gay guy in the comic book. I don't necessarily know how much I trust, like, heterosexual guy who doesn't have a lot of personal exposure to the LGBT community to do that character well. I think he needs to do his anthropological research, literally. But
maybe
I think it's great if they have a character who's more like that. I'm sorry?
Yeah, I mean, I say maybe he is around it. I mean, you never know. The one is, I say the good thing is, I don't know who actually said this quote, But he made a comment was, does it scare the shit out of me? I might inadvertently piss off a group I want to reflect in a positive way. At least gives me hope that they realize that it's a very thin line between being a positive role model and then also being a stereotype.
Yes, no, I quote, and he understands that this is that there's a tightrope to walk, you know.
Yeah, so
but I don't think that using the word flamboyant is really the appropriate term, because you can be flamboyantly a lot of things, you know.
Yeah.
I mean, heck, Midnighter is a flamboyantly butch leather top. Like, that's just the way he is. You can be flamboyant in a hyper masculine way. So, but if people's general discomfort in talking about it does go to reflect that, you know, a lot of folks feel that if you discuss a male character as being more effeminate, that that's looked at as being a negative thing rather than just a description of that person.
Yeah. And there was the one thing, it got me really thinking about it, is I think a lot of that type of character or those type of people in real life, a lot of it is how they speak and how maybe how they kind of act in person, which is difficult to show off in comic books, because mm-hmm. it's really kind of like a static image and you have text. So one, unless you know the person maybe talks with a lisp, for instance, it's kind
right.
of hard to get that off in text without the text being kind of silly.
Agreed. And of course, it's complicated by the fact that the character is not American, and I'm, you know, primarily familiar, for example, with like how Americans speak and things like that. So I, you know, there might be cultural differences with him being from Mexico, and
yes.
Yeah, it's going to be a challenge.
Yeah. So
but
I mean,
it looks pretty good, though. I was like, yeah, no, I have guy friends who wear that for sure. So
I haven't seen the character.
Look at his hair. I'm like, yes, I know plenty of guys with that hair. That's good.
It's good. Like, there's another instance where I think they're. You always see comics moving forward, being a bit more open, progressive, in a good sense. And it's interesting. Like, I think it's just another – it's a good direction I think DC is going in, because generally when I think of DC, I think of more Pollyannish 50s, 60s, like, gosh, gee willy kind of superheroes. So – To mix it up, bring in more diversity is just a good thing, I think, in general.
Yeah, definitely. So I'm looking forward to picking up Teen Titans for sure when it comes out. I'm really interested in seeing how it's done.
Yeah, I mean...
I'll definitely have to get some of my gay guy friends who read comics to give me some feedback on it as well. I think that's going to be really interesting seeing. I mean, there's a lot of gay guys who are comics bloggers and stuff like that. I'm curious
yes.
how they'll respond to
it. Yeah, very interesting. Very interesting seeing that. I mean, generally... good, like, I don't know if you're reading Alpha Flight, North Stars.
I'm not.
North Star was, like, one of the first out characters, and I remember that issue coming, like, hitting newsstand and what a huge shit show that turned into as far as coverage. And a lot of part of Alpha Flight, like, it's kind of stuck in the fair self, so Canada's falling apart like the rest of the world, is North Star keeps on running off and being like, I need to go save my boyfriend. And it's still very, he's very hetero in how they present him, but at least it's nice of, like, it's they keep on almost beating it into you with every single issue of just, like, my boyfriend, which is, it's nice to see. Like, it adds something different. It's not the same old damsel in distress. It's
mm-hmm.
his other guy in distress, I guess.
Rather than, like, Iris. Needing rescuing by the Flash, it's Ira. You know, I don't actually remember what his boyfriend's name is.
It's Ira.
I really enjoyed how the character was written in Uncanny recently, but I have not been reading Alpha Flight.
Yeah, I mean, the Alpha Flight at all is kind of so-so. As much as I love Canadians and all that, I still say eh. But it's nice to you see this very kind of out front character. So, you know, hopefully Teen Titans, it's a new character, we get some exposure. So it's going to be good. I think overall it's a good direction they're going. I'm just trying to think of what other kind of like big minority changes have been going on.
Well, we lost one of the few disabled characters, of course. One of the
yeah.
wheelchair.
And you know what? And someone actually mentioned that, and I meant to bring that up, is so I mentioned it with our petition was, people are all shapes and sizes and different mobility. And
yeah.
I thought that was funny is that all our discussion about this petition none of us brought that up.
Yeah, well, we guess because we're almost all, like, past, like, we're almost resigned ourselves to the loss of Oracle in some ways, I think. It's like, oh, she's gone. That sucks.
Yes, and, I mean, even more, like, and going back to that, was it wasn't even that it just wasn't handled all that great. It was literally like this happened, we're moving on, get over it. Like,
no, it's a huge disappointment, especially the fact that it's like written by such a fantastic comic book writer who's done such wonderful work with that character. So of the best, you know, mainstream comic stuff that's been done, I think she's done. And so it was really disappointing how that issue was really disappointing in how it handled the history of Barbara Gordon.
And I wonder if a part of it was just like, you know what, there is no realistic way that we can justify this occurring. Let's just bring it up in like 3 panels and move the F on. Because we have to. Like, it's the elephant in the room. You have to address it. So let's do it so quick that we know we're going to piss everyone off and just don't even look back. And I wonder if, how much that was part of it. Because, I mean, it's interesting is that DC, you have these issues. You've got Harley Quinn dressing up like a dominatrix stripper. The Waller's now half the woman she used to be. and then you've got Barbara Gordon walking. And it's also 3 women.
Yeah.
Which is even more fascinating. Because I can't think of any guys that this is like a drastic change. Superman's a dick now.
That's pretty drastic. Well, that's not true. I mean, there is that famous website, Superman is a Dick. There's
right.
Lots of documentation of Superman's dickitude, but it does seem a different thing now.
Yeah.
Yes, it's superdickery.com. People should go check out superdickery.com.
And I say, imagine you have to get that URL right. But I can't think of, like, anything else, like, that's really changed. I mean, Wonder Woman, I think, is out, what, next week or the week after. It'll be fascinating to see what difference we see in her. Because it'll be...
Yeah, I'm kind of dreading it.
I think it's going to raise a lot of eyebrows is if the drastic changes in DC characters all have occurred in women.
Yes, I think I haven't heard anybody else mention that yet, but it's definitely something for us to look out for. I think Cliff Chang is a wonderful artist. Huge fan of his work, but I'm worried.
Brian Azzarello is the writer. And my worry is it's not his talent. I think he's an amazing writer. It's just everything I've read of his is more crime and noirish, which tends to have a very specific take on women, and it's not all that positive.
Yeah.
But that's the type of writing,
And it's also not. It's very not Wonder Woman. I mean, they should have put Gail Simone on that book. Dear Lord, that would have been wonderful.
Yeah.
But no.
No, and that's the one,
or like...
Kurt
Busiek, maybe, or, like, somebody who can do iconic really well. I don't know.
That would be... Yeah, I mean, that's the only thing. It's not a shot at him as a writer. Like, he's amazing at writing. Like, I highly recommend picking up his Vertigo crime comic, and I can't think of which one he did, but it's fantastic. I know some people hated Joker. I really liked it. Also did, I think, 100 Bullets, which is a great series.
I didn't like 100 Bullets. It was not fun for me at all. I mean, that's not the point.
Yeah, but his thing is, like, it's a very noir crime comics that he writes. And that's it. And that's all I've really read of his. So him doing Wonder Woman really kind of made... When I saw it, I was just like, interesting. He's not the person I would have picked. But then again, I wanted to pick Judd Winnick for Batwing, and I thought he did pretty decent on that first issue. So it's... It's interesting. It's like out of the two companies, DC is doing a lot more to kind of shake things up, not necessarily the most positive ways, and it seems to all be focused on women.
I think that's because the male fan base is so dedicatedly wedded to the male heroes being exactly as they always have been, but they don't identify with the female heroes quite as much, and therefore... they are given more space to change the female heroes because the strong identification isn't there as consistently.
Well, the other is, how much can you change the male heroes, though? You've got Batman, you got Superman, Green Lantern, Aquaman.
Oh, yeah, you know what? They totally changed Green Arrow. They made Green Arrow nothing at all like Green Arrow and totally lame. So I guess there's that change. The laming of Green Arrow.
Green Lantern Arrow became much more bland, not as entertaining. Green Lantern's more kind of like Ryan Reynolds' depiction of him in the movie. Batman is Batman. I don't think there's been much change of Batman. We've said Superman's a bit more arrogant and dickish. But other than that, like, the guys haven't gone really through drastic changes, either in looks or really their looks, because that's kind of what the women have all changed.
That's true. Well, that's definitely true.
I mean, even you could say Barbara Gordon walking is a change in her look. It's kind of fascinating to see that. And I'm trying to think of Marvel, like, have they really screwed around with female characters that much? And I can't think of it.
Well, when they have, it's been part of their character development in a way that made sense.
Yeah, I'm just
like Storm changing her look was like an important part of her narrative of like, you know, coming into herself. You know, things like that. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah, I'm just trying to think of, you've got Storm, where she kind of went through her punk rock phase. She went through her African goddess phase. Now she's kind of in her worldly diplomatic phase, which I really, really like.
Yeah.
You have Rogue kind of did some changes every once in a while. And she's definitely matured over the years. I'm trying to think, the other ones, like Ms. Marvel really hasn't changed a whole lot.
I was going
to
say Ms. Marvel. Well, in some ways.
Has she?
Yeah, I mean, she kind of goes in and out of being more military-oriented in her self-identification and how she...
And you know what? Speaking of women depiction, I don't know if you've read Avengers at all, and it comes up maybe in a couple other issues, is you've got Ms. Marvel, Hellcat, and Jessica Jones are supposed to be, like, best friends. And I love the depictions of the three of them when they're just three normal girls who are trying to have a normal life on top of being a superhero. It's some of the best writing I see, and so entertaining, and I wish there was more of it.
I agree. You know, there are great characters to have hanging out with each other, and I really like comics exploring female friendships in those ways. I like comics exploring friendships, period. I mean, one of the interesting, great things that made Secret Six so wonderful was the relationships between the characters, especially people who don't really know how to have friends having friends. The whole thing, you know, with Deadshot and Catman and their friendship. I agree that the ladies off duty in Avengers has been really nice, really well done.
Especially when they keep on talking about, like, oh, you should date this guy. Like, I think it's hilarious. And it's a great depiction. But, I mean, as a whole, like, I can't think of anything Marvel's done where it's been such a drastic change to female characters, either in their looks that are, like, off character. Like, Storm going to your rock, like, punk warrior phase still seemed like a natural thing. Harley Quinn going from her spandex to a corset stripper outfit, not quite so much. Amanda Waller losing all this weight, not so much. Barbara Gordon
becoming younger, magic, like not just 5 years younger, but like decades younger, you know.
But younger, I can almost kind of shrug off in that they're trying to make a lot of the characters younger. Like Superman's supposed to be a bit younger, Batman's supposed to be a bit younger.
Yeah, and I agree. But there should be some middle-aged characters, kind of like how there are middle-aged people in the world existing out and about.
Her issue,
living and whatnot.
She wouldn't be that young and in that position.
Yeah, completely. That's not how it works.
No, I mean, she should be easily in her late 30s, 40s at least, if she's in that position.
Yeah.
So, I mean, that's my, her being young and de-aged, I guess. That would be my issue with it. It just doesn't fit. But then again, you know, if you're talking to someone who spent a hell of a lot of time trying to figure out how old Batman is, to figure out how Damian can be his kid.
Yeah, you got to get your priorities in line. None of that's ever going to make sense, Brett. I can just give up. Chinatown, you know.
Now I've got my question for New York Comic Con, is I'm going to walk up and on the microphone ask them, how old is Bruce Wayne if Damian is this, whatever, 12-year-old kid or 13-year-old kid in Batman and Robin?
Yeah.
See if we get a response.
It reminds us, you know, we'll be covering Comic-Con from the Friday this year, so I hope folks will stick around for our coverage from that. I'm really looking forward to it. I haven't really covered Comic-Con Express myself yet, so.
It should be fun. There's some stuff coming up that I can't talk about, but it should be very interesting, this Comic-Con.
Great.
Yeah, so, yeah, I'm trying to think. I mean, we're anything else to bring up? I mean, there's some other great releases came out this week. Pigs, the first issue, which we praised.
Definitely.
That people should absolutely go out and get. There's a series called 27, second set, which is the second volume. The first issue came out this week, and I thought was excellent. Trying to think what else. I mean, that's all that really popped out at me. So, don't know.
I picked up the Avengers Annual. I haven't had a chance to crack the spine yet. Schism is really good. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing how that plays out. So, folks, keep on reading your X books. Great stuff is going on, especially in Uncanny.
Yeah.
And Journey into Mystery has been great too. Basically,
yes.
I'm a total Karen Gillan fangirl, but with reason. He's wonderful writer in the tradition of Joss Whedon's best work. Very character-driven, personality-driven, very interesting and sensitive and creative and fun and non-generic.
I can get with that. I think the Uncanny I'm kind of iffy on. It hasn't been as exciting for me.
Wrong. But okay.
We have to have, yeah. Well,
anybody who's fans of Kitty and Colossus should definitely be reading these books.
Absolutely, and from the teaser image that I saw about them, it's going to get very interesting.
Yeah, definitely.
So, yeah, I think that's it for the show.
Yeah, we're about out of time, I believe.
Yes. So.
Thanks for tuning in, everybody.
Yeah, appreciate it, as
and
always.
We'll be back next week with the new books, next week probably, right?
Yeah, so we're going to have new books next week, and I'll see what else comes up in the news over the span of the week.
Sounds good. So. See y'all later. Talk to y'all later.
Yep. Appreciate you calling in, and good luck in the rest of your trip.
Bye, Brett.
Yep, bye.